Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Hey, you Dog Speak Geeks. I hope you're having a wonderful week. I hope the weather is treating you nice. We've been warm, and then we got cold, and we're going to be warm again. If you're in part of the country in the United States that has a couple of feet of snow, I am so sorry. I know your dogs are probably going nuts and crazy, so you better have some really good plans for enrichment, making sure that you're working that brain and getting them mentally tired, so that you're not having to focus on physical tiredness. When we focus on physical, we increase our dog's stamina. And it's going to take a lot more work to make them as tired as you want them to be. So really focus on your mental through enrichment. Things like snuffle mats or nosework games, puzzles, anything like that can really help your dog feel a little bit more relaxed and not so cabin feverish, maybe is the word I'm going for. Anyway, I want to talk about something today that continues along the line of what I focus so much of my work on, and that is chronic stress and trauma in dogs. I specifically want to talk about the vagus nerve today. It seems to be something that has come up in the last couple of years, where the polyvagal theory and resetting your dog's vagus nerve, I've seen ads on and off for the last couple of years, and a lot of people are starting to ask questions about the vagus nerve, and is it a real thing of regulating and resetting the vagus nerve? And so I want to talk a little bit about the vagus nerve today and about dysregulation. Obviously, I talk a lot about dysregulation. I will say that as much work as I have put in for regulating my nervous system, there are moments in time that I get dysregulated. And there's nothing wrong with getting dysregulated. Dysregulation of the nervous system happens. We're gonna have those moments to where we get piled on with triggers or just emotional situations that occur in our life and just, you know, what we surround ourselves with and what every day, what kind of toll that can take on us. It's not that we're not going to ever be dysregulated. That's going to happen. The important thing is how long do we stay dysregulated? Do we recognize that we're dysregulated? And do we do what we need to do in order to get back to homeostasis and regulation? Not just for you, but our dog, right? It's this resilience that we like to talk about. It's knowing that we're going to have stressful moments, knowing that we're going to have issues that really create turmoil in our system. But what do we do with that? How do we handle it? How quickly do we recover, right? If we have a bad day on a Monday, is our whole week screwed up? Or if we have a bad day on Monday, we're able to bounce back by Tuesday or maybe by Thursday. Or maybe you just have a bad month. And that is what we need to stop thinking about and focusing on. We focus so much here in the United States about the new year and making resolutions, and sticking with those, because it feels like we should just get it all together on the first day of the year. And that's just really kind of dumb. It's important to have goals. But to think that if I don't do something in this time, I'm not going to be able to have a good year. And that's just not the case, right? We really need to focus on our mental health and regulating our emotions and what our world is becoming, and I do say the world because as a world and a society, we're all dealing with a lot of the same stuff with what's going on just in our environment. Not talking dog stuff right there, but just in general, life. So it's very common for us to get dysregulated to a degree. And sometimes that's daily. And here's the great thing is it doesn't have to be the start of a day. It doesn't have to be the end of the day. It doesn't have to be a start of the week, a start of the year, start of the month. You can change it anytime. And changes actually start happening the moment you decide it. The moment you decide to make a change, that's when the change happens. So if you decide to get healthy, then that's when the change starts. Now, whether you stick with that, that's on you. But here's the thing. If you go and you're being healthy for 3 days and then you slip up on the fourth day, no big deal. Just get back on it. It's not a end-all be-all. So many times when people are in negative situations, they think that this is it. And this is all we got. When we can just make a difference by making a decision and starting there. You can write your world and make that decision to say, you know what? I'm not going to have it today. This is not the day that's going to happen. Or, yes, I'm feeling this today, but I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to make sure that I regulate myself. Maybe because others depend on me. My dog depends on me. Maybe family members depend on me. Or, you know what? I depend a lot on myself. So I got to be there for me. And you're probably thinking, well, Nikki, how are you there for you if you're dysregulated? Well, it's simple. I notice I'm dysregulated and I do the things that I need to do for me to take care of me and bring my peace back because I'm the only one in charge of my peace. I'm not in control of anyone else's peace and no one else is in control of my peace. I am in charge of my peace. So I want to make sure I do the things, whether that is remove myself from a situation, go no contact for a day or a couple hours. Maybe it's take a nap, take a walk, go to the gym, play with my dog, write, read, binge a baking show. Whatever I have to do, I need to make sure I do it to regulate myself. Because if I don't regulate myself, I can't help those around me, including my dog. And here's the thing about your dog. They will feel dysregulated, but unless we give them situations, scenarios, and options, how are they going to learn to regulate? Most dogs don't learn how to regulate because our environments are so busy that it's never a slow enough time to allow for regulation. Some dogs are resilient and they can dysregulate and then bounce right back. I would say that most of those that bounce right back are probably not truly dysregulated. They just felt some stress and it was temporary and then they were fine. Dogs who stay dysregulated, that's an issue. What does dysregulation look like? Looks like reactivity, hypervigilance, excessive barking, lunging, pulling. These are things that most of the time people call disobedience. My dog is pulling on the leash. I need to teach him to walk nicely on a leash. Yeah, you probably do, but we also need to consider your dog's overall welfare. Is your dog feeling comfortable in the environment? Is your dog connected to you and knowing what it is that you want? Is the dog wearing comfortable equipment to where walking is actually comfortable? Right? Is the collar too tight, harness too tight? Does the leash create too much pressure all the time? Instead of just focusing on my dog's pulling and I have to make it stop pulling, we need to first start with the dog as an individual and asking those questions. If my dog is pulling when I'm taking him for a walk, then it could be that the dog is feeling nervous and anxious for fear of what they may see on a walk because they don't have the skills to handle the things in a walk. So it might be a dump truck or another dog off leash. Maybe it's a squirrel that runs across their path and it scares them. Or loud cars zooming by. Bicycles. I mean, these are all things that your dog may come across. And if they know they're going to be coming across these on a walk, then they can start the walk out already being anxious, already being hypervigilant. So if they start the walk being hypervigilant, then more than likely they're going to have a hard time being responsive to you and have a hard time tapping into the skills that you've taught, if you have taught any, because they're going to have a hard time accessing their memory. When they are hypervigilant, they're right there already. They're in fight or flight, so they're prepared. Their whole system is set up and ready for fight or flight. That's a miserable state to be in. It's a miserable place for your dog to be in, and they can only count on you to help them because you control so much of their life. You control when they go eat, when they potty, mostly, most people do, right? When they get to go for a walk, when they get to have friends over or go play with friends, you control all that. What we need to do is really start understanding our dogs so that we know when they are feeling dysregulated, even if it's not a long-term issue, but knowing when they're dysregulated so that we can give them the skills that they need and the opportunities that they need to regulate. I mean, this is, you know, across the board, I would say the majority of the behaviors I deal with are all based in chronic stress or trauma. And that stress can come from many things. It can come from the environment. It can come from pain, not feeling well, GI upset. It could come from the inside, right, of the home. Constant loud television, constantly kids running and screaming, constant radio or music playing, the constant hum of the Wi-Fi or, you know, the microwave going off and reminds them of, you know, something scary like an invisible fence collar. I've had a lot of dogs who have problems with that because they've been trained on an invisible fence collar or a shock collar. And that beep sounds very similar to the warning of prior to getting shocked. And it's especially prevalent with the dogs that are in invisible fences. Because they get right to the edge and they hear the beep and then they get shocked and they start to learn that the beep is anticipating the shock and that beep sounds very similar to a microwave. So there are a lot of things that can really cause your dog to be dysregulated. Not to mention just genetically. They could have been, inundated with stress hormones and cortisol levels because when they were in utero, mom was stressed and was constantly on fight or flight. And so that fight or flight becomes the norm for your dog. Good news is there are a lot of things that we can do, and I've talked about it on this podcast a lot, on setting up the spa rooms and doing those things to help your dog complete that stress cycle and pattern games, predictability, and we're going to touch on that again today. But this is going to be more about information and you understanding why we recommend these techniques. Understand why you need to use these techniques. So let's get into the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is a part of the autonomic nervous system. Now, this is biology. It has nothing to do with the personality of the dog. Okay, so even if they were in utero and had massive amounts of cortisol running through their mom, it's still not their personality. It's a part of their biological makeup. So understanding that vagus nerve and the important part that it plays in your dog's system, but not just in your dog's system, it's also a part of your system. We have very similar systems, and that's why you need to learn to regulate so that your dog can regulate and y'all can regulate together. Right? How many times are you dysregulated and you expect your dog to help you regulate, help your dog to help you soothe and relax from a long day of work? But have you thought that maybe your dog's had a rough day and their system is dysregulated? And then you have two systems that are trying to regulate each other, but you're both so dysregulated, you just keep being dysregulated. Regulation needs to start with you so that you can help your dog. And let's just say regulation is more than dysregulation. Because like I said, we're all going to get dysregulated at times. We're all going to get triggered. It's how we handle it and how quickly do we bounce back from that. So when you're listening to this today, think about ways that you can help yourself reset or deal with the dysregulation you may be feeling. And understand that there are things that you can do for yourself, just like there are things that you can do for your dog. So first, let's talk about what the vagus nerve is. Now, the vagus nerve is the largest cranial nerve, and it runs from the brainstem down through the throat, through the heart, through the lungs, and into the digestive tract. It's responsible for the rest, digest, and repair. So it's responsible for regulation. Okay, and the autonomic nervous system is a part of that rest, digest. It's when you're just in homeostasis. You're just chilling. Life is good. Everything's fine. You're able to breathe normal. Your heart rate's normal. Your blood pressure's normal. And you're not having to think about any of it. It's just what it is, because that is the normal that your body should be in. Let me give it to you in terms of, let's say, a car. So if we're looking at it as the vagus nerve being like a car, well, we'll say the dog's nervous system's like a car. The sympathetic nervous system is the gas pedal, okay? It's what mobilizes the body. Whether the dog is chasing something, reacting to something, is being alert or moving. Now, that system is necessary, right? Without that, your dog couldn't play, tap into their genetics, be protective, or just even respond to the world. Now, the vagus nerve is the brake system. Okay, when the brake is, it's strong, it's responsive, it's what it needs to be, then it doesn't matter how fast the car goes, because we know that the brake will allow us to slow down smoothly, navigate that traffic, stop when we need to, and basically be able to move through the world safely. But if the vagus nerve, your brake system, is weak, worn down, the car can still accelerate. And sometimes it's very quick and it stays very, very fast. But it struggles to slow down because it doesn't have the brake system. It may lurch forward, it may skid, it overcorrects. Right? It's running too high. Right? Your RPMs are too high and there's no way to slow it down. That's basically what's happening in dysregulated dogs. They're constantly on the gas pedal. They're not able to settle down. They're not able to be calm. They're constantly hypervigilant. They've got reactivity. And there are some dogs that you think are calm, but they're actually more into shutdown, where they're both basically in freeze mode, avoidance mode, often learned helplessness. And that learned helplessness is, no matter what I do, the stress isn't going to stop, so I'm just going to stop trying. That's learned helplessness, and it's a really, really sad place to be. So we don't, when we have a car with that issue, right, where it runs fast, it speeds up, but the brakes suck, we don't fix the car by yelling at it or punishing it or getting out and kicking the tires or, you know, kicking the car door and screaming at the car. No, we improve the brake system. We get new brakes. We strengthen them. We really focus on the brake system. Now we could do this again using a little bit of a metaphor on a Wi-Fi signal. For those of you that are maybe in cities and you're like, Nikki, I don't drive much. I don't have to. I don't even have a car. Let's talk about the Wi-Fi signal. Your dog's vagus nerve is like a Wi-Fi connection between the brain and the body. When the signal's strong, communication flows clearly, meaning that your dog's muscles relax, digestion is functioning properly, the heart rate is where it needs to be, learning is going to be happening. But when the signal's weak or disrupted, messages are going to get scrambled, recovery takes longer, the body overreacts, and the system defaults to survival mode, which is basically staying in fight or flight. Here's the thing is we're not here to control the behavior. We're not here to control your dog. What we're here is to improve the signal strength between your vagus nerve and the rest of what is taking place. So when we talk about chronic stress in dogs, what we're often really talking about is a braking system that has been worn down by too much gas and not enough recovery. And especially because so many people working from home, dogs are not resting the way they need to be resting. How many times a day do you get up from your chair in your office and walk through the house, go outside, go to the bathroom? How many times are you making those noises? Your dog is going to have a hard time just resting because of constant stimulation. There are times where you're like, I can't work here. I need to go somewhere where I'm not so stimulated. I can't work in a coffee shop because there's too much stimulation. I have to work in the library because there's much less stimulation. We see it all the time. Too much stimulation, it prevents us from resting, prevents us from even oftentimes focusing on what we need to focus on in that moment. So you might be asking yourself, hell, I wonder if my vagus nerve is messed up. Let's talk more about the vagus nerve. Okay, so now hopefully you understand a little bit more of what that means. So let's talk about dysregulation, what it looks like in dogs again. I've talked about this a lot, but I'm going to talk about it again because I know sometimes you guys need to hear something more than once, and you may be a first-time listener on here. If that's the case, there's usually a little bit more funny and a little bit faster, but I'm in a little dysregulated state today. So I'm a little bit more on the lower end of energy. I recognize it, and I will do things to handle it. Unfortunately, I have situations in my life right now, with losing my mother, and then my father is not doing very well with the loss and having to deal with that. So I have to know that I have to make sure I take time to protect myself and protect my peace while still being there for those that need me. But I can't be there for them if I don't take care of me. You can't be there for your dog if you don't take care of you first. So when your dog is in fight or flight, sometimes that is a sympathetic overactivation where you're getting that reactivity, where the dog startles very easily. They don't have the ability to settle. Maybe they lay down in a corner and they sit for maybe a minute and then they get up and move to another spot and then they lay there for a few minutes, then they move again. Or they're constantly barking, lunging, pulling, just not able to get any focus whatsoever outside. Many times people think, oh, the dog's just distracted and never worked around distractions. If we think about it that way, then we're going to immediately go to more of obedience techniques, and many people will go to correcting and punishing the dog for not focusing on them. But I have to ask you, is your dog truly just giving you the middle finger and being disobedient, and I'm putting that in quotes, or is your dog's nervous system dysregulated and they don't have the capability to deal with what's in the environment, the ever-changing environment on a walk? Ever-changing environment on the walk. Let's immediately stop the whole my dog's being an asshole, disobedient bullshit. We need to start looking deeper. And if we start looking deeper, then we will find that there are no need for aversive techniques and tools to get a dog to walk nicely. Because guess what? You can use a shock collar or a prong collar on a dog and take them for a walk, and they may look like they are calm and relaxed when in reality they have learned helplessness and they've shut down and they're still hypervigilant and they're still feeling the reactivity inside, but they know better than to show the external behavior because they're going to get punished for it. It suppresses the external behavior, but it does not fix the underlying issue, which is the dysregulated nervous system, the constant feeling of fight or flight. Or, like I said, the shutdown. Dorsal shutdown is basically the what people want to call stubbornness, right? Dog is avoiding. They have low energy. Most dogs that I see trained with aversive techniques and tools, whether it's in person, whether it's on videos online, I can see the dog's body language and I can see that they're not being, you know, obedient in the way that people think. They're just being shut down and learned, hey, I have to do this in order to avoid the shock, the stim, the choke, the pinch, whatever aversive tool you're using. They learn to avoid it by not pulling and lunging, but yet they're still feeling nervous inside. They're still feeling like they're about to have a panic attack. But they can't, because out of survival, they have to avoid the punishment that is right there next to them in the human and in the tool. That's a sad, sad place to be. And that's how you know when you have trainers that jump to those tools, that's how you know they don't understand truly about how the brain functions, how the nervous system is so critical to the learning aspect and getting our dogs comfortable in this environment, in this world. So it's not so much a training technique, and that's why you don't hear a lot of training techniques on my podcast. You're not going to. One, it's very hard to explain some of these training techniques to people by just audio, right? That's why we have a YouTube channel. That's why you can go see the videos of us doing things in, you know, on video. This is about understanding the dog, who they are, so that when you start to use training techniques, you're doing it in a way that is more respectful and takes your dog's complete welfare and biology into account. Instead of letting your, and this is not for everyone, but instead of letting your ego run the show saying, I have to make sure I have an obedient dog. I want to have an obedient dog, and I want people to look at me and go, wow, you have an obedient dog. But that's about you. So you see, none of this is really about obedience issues. It's about nervous system. It's about what state is your dog's nervous system in. So some of the common causes of vagal dysregulation, and just across the board, nervous system dysregulation, chronic stress. We talk about that a lot. Kids running in and out all the time. Kids home from school. Summertime. If it wasn't for dogs able to probably get outside, they would probably have a harder time because kids are home more. It's constantly loud. It's not as much rest. And I know that there are probably some parents listening going, oh, shit, me too. It's so much better working from home when my kids are in school. Some of you may go back to the office when it becomes summertime and your kids are at home. Early life trauma, whether that's losing siblings, being taken from the mother too early, mother not having enough milk, not having a safe place to be, being rehomed, being sent to a boarding train, being removed from their secure attachment to the environment they're familiar with. Pain and medical issues. Just because you have a puppy does not mean they're not pain or medical issues taking place. We're seeing a lot more dogs, young puppies, being diagnosed with a little bit of arthritis. So don't just think that your dog is healthy because they're running, they're playing, they're, you know, they seem happy. They may be, but they also may not know what it feels like to feel good. So when you see an external behavior, what I want you to understand is that behavior is an expression of your dog's internal state. Behavior is communication and an expression of what your dog's internal state is. Regulated, dysregulated. There are ways to support and regulate the vagus nerve. I'm going to just do a very quick rundown because we have talked about it 1,000 times on here. So I'm not going to get into the detail, but to start out with, predictability, routine. If your dog feels safe, if your dog knows what to expect, that's absolutely going to help tremendously. And think about that. Anytime you're feeling anxious, as long as you have expectations set, you know what's about to take place, your anxiety can lessen. We talked about using massage and T-touch, acupressure. That slow, intentional touch is huge. If you didn't listen to that, go back and listen to that episode. Enrichment, we talk about meeting your dog's genetic needs regularly. This is an everyday thing, whether that is through sniffing, sniffaries, snuffle mats, nose work games, puzzles, toys, flirt poles, herding ball, whatever, right? Your dog needs that enrichment. Doing something that reminds them who they are and what their purpose is. You have a herding dog? Then get a herding ball or a remote control car and teach them how to herd that. You have a retriever? Okay. Throw a plastic-looking duck in the weeds and let them go and get it. I mean, there are just many things we can do. What I don't want you doing, though, is, especially with like retrievers, is sitting there and throwing the ball 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 times for 30 minutes. Now, these are things that enrichment's going to be more about the dog doing more for himself than you doing it for him. All right, there are things you can do to help, but I'd much rather your dog have agency over their engagement with the enrichment. If you are one of your dog's secure attachment, having that safe social engagement is important. So soft eye contact, making sure that you're regulated, so slow breathing, talking to your dog like you're Mr. Rogers. That's important to help support that, because remember, our nervous systems will feed off of each other. And if you have a dog who is much more sensitive, they're going to know when you're dysregulated. Sometimes I don't know how I feel in the mornings, and I just wait until Myers tells me. If I'm in a good place, he'll run into my room and jump on my bed, and we do our little kind of play massage game that we do every morning. If I'm feeling dysregulated or not even know I'm feeling dysregulated, he won't do it. It's really interesting. It's really a lot of fun. Sometimes I'll call him in there because I'm like, I feel fine. And that can help me start my day off right. Deep sleep restores vagal balance. So if you're not getting sleep, you need to make sure you're getting sleep. If your dog is not getting sleep, you need to make sure they're getting sleep. And how do dogs get sleep? They're in a quiet place like a spa room with external stimuli being muted and giving them opportunities to do some type of lick mat to help calm the nervous system. And when you set up a spa room and they know that's what that room is for, or they know what that room plus the sound machine, the fan, the lavender, the lick mat, they know it's all about rest and relaxation. And they don't have to worry about what's coming next because they know it's just chilling. And if you're sleeping in the bed with your dog, I don't care. I know a lot of people freak out when they tell me that their dog sleeps in the bed with them. I don't care. But what I do want to make sure is that everybody's getting good sleep. If you or your dog's waking up several times a night, you're not getting good sleep. And if you're having to not move for fear of kicking your dog, you're not getting good sleep. It's best if your dog has their room, their bed, and you have yours. Sometimes I do let Willow sleep with me. Sometimes it's only half of the night because she wakes me up. And so when she wakes me up, I put her in her crate. right? And then there are some nights where I'm like, I don't want to wake up and wait on this, so I'm just going to go ahead and put her in her crate, and that's where she's going to be. We'll have time that we spend on the bed together, but she sleeps mostly in her crate. And that helps everybody get sleep. You've got to avoid the aversive tools and the aversive training styles. Screaming, yelling, shake cans, hard verbal no's, shock collars, e-collars, prong collars, slip leads, rolled up towels to throw at them. And yes, that is a thing. Stop, guys, stop. Please, can we just stop with the aversive tools? There's nothing that important that your dog needs to know that we cannot manage while teaching using positive methods. And oftentimes when you're using aversive tools, you're not regulating anything. You're suppressing behavior. Why? Because suppression is that the outward behavior stops to ensure that they don't get the correction. That's how aversive tools work. I'm not going to bark because if I do, I'm going to get shocked. Right? That's how the bark collars work. If I bark, I get a warning. If I bark again, I get shocked. So I'm going to stop barking. It doesn't take away the need to bark. It doesn't take away the need to communicate. It just takes away the external behavior. So you suppressed it. You didn't fix anything. And when you have a dog who's lunging or hypervigilant or barking on a walk or whatever that might look like, you're using aversive tools, you can stop that pulling and lunging, but like I said, it's not fixing the internal state. Regulation is about physiology shifts. It's about regulating the nervous system to make sure it stays in a place of rest and not staying in a place of fight, flight, freeze. All right, so we have to ask, does your dog look calm or is your dog actually calm? Because just because you look calm doesn't mean that the system is calm. I don't know about you, but I know that there are times that people look at me and they're like, wow, you were just so calm. When in reality, my heart rate was increased. I could feel my blood pressure rising. I could feel a knot in my stomach. I could feel my breathing start to increase. I looked calm, but I wasn't feeling calm. And I looked calm because in that situation, maybe I was the leader that everyone was looking for to take care of something. Regulation is something that you can get, and it's something that you can help your dog with. The great thing about the vagus nerve is it's adaptable. Right, there's still plenty of neuroplasticity going on in your dog's brain that we can do this. We can create small, consistent changes that's going to create those long-term shifts, which is going to improve your dog's overall health, overall digestion, overall resilience, overall lifespan, right? We all want our dogs to live longer. If we want our dogs to live longer, we have to start with helping them regulate their nervous system, right? So when we support the vagus nerve, we aren't just improving behavior. We're improving our dog's capacity to feel safe in this world, navigate the changes, and learn the skills they need in order to feel comfortable in this world. Now, before I wrap up, I do want to bring in the polyvagal theory. Because, and I'm just going to give a very simple explanation of this, because I know that's something that people are starting to see a lot more of the polyvagal theory. So I want to just talk about it a little bit. The polyvagal theory, it was developed by Stephen Porges. It helps to understand how the nervous system shifts between states of safety and survival. Okay, so poly means many, vagal refers to the vagus nerve. So the theory explains that the vagus nerve has different branches that influence how the body responds to the world. And those responses follow a hierarchy. Now there are three main states that your dog can move through. Again, this is the polyvagal theory. I'll talk about a disclaimer at the end of it because this is a fairly new kind of position on the vagus nerve. So the first state is the ventral vagal state, And I really like, he kind of breaks it down in red light, yellow light, green light. And I actually have included it into the book that I'm working on because I do think people need to understand it just because we are hearing a lot more of it. But the first is the ventral vagal state. This is the safety and social engagement. Now, this is a regulated state. In this state, your dog should have loose body posture, curiosity, willingness to learn, soft face, soft eyes, and overall just recovers quickly from stress, right? The heart rate's flexible, digestion's good, and the dog can connect socially. And this is where dogs are going to be learning the best. Now, the second is the sympathetic state, and that's your fight or flight. So if the system detects danger, it moves into mobilization. And this is where you're going to see the reactivity, barking, pacing, hypervigilance. Again, this is not disobedience. It's the body preparing to survive. So the gas pedal's been pressed. The third state's the dorsal vagal state, which is your shutdown and your freeze. Now, if the nervous system feels completely overwhelmed, cannot escape, it may shift into shutdown mode. In shutdown mode, many of these dogs appear stubborn, all right? They may have low energy. They avoid many situations, including the people they're supposed to love the most. Basic shutdown, disengagement, disassociation, right? This is not calmness. It's conservation. It's the body's trying to survive by just doing nothing. And that is not a good place to be. Now, the nervous system is constantly scanning for safety. And this is why if we can create predictability, then our dogs don't have to scan for safety. They're just going to know. But when you're talking about the nervous system, the process is called neuroception. It's detecting danger or safety without conscious thought. We're all really doing it. And maybe not every day in our house, but if you've go to, let's say, a concert at a downtown venue, right? Your nervous system may constantly scan for safety as you're walking from the venue to your car. And you don't realize it, but it is doing it. Dogs are exceptionally sensitive to this because they don't understand this world that we're in, right? But they're also going to be sensitive to how we're handling it. They're going to respond to our tone, our breathing, our emotional state, right? Their nervous system is reading ours if we have that connection. So the polyvagal theory basically helps us understand that behavior is state dependent. And you can't teach a dog who's in fight or flight. You can't teach if a dog doesn't feel safe. You can't punish a dog into regulation. Safety is not taught through corrections and punishment. It's experienced through consistency, predictability, connection, communication. Your dog doesn't choose between good or bad, and I know a lot of people think that. Their nervous system is choosing between safe and unsafe. And if we have an environment that is so unpredictable, then it's constantly being triggered to stay in that hypervigilant state. And that is a very bad place to be. So if you understand that, then hopefully you'll understand that we need to stop trying to control the behavior and start supporting the regulation. Stop jumping straight to, I need my dog to stop doing XYZ. Jumping, barking, pulling. I need my dog to stop doing that. Well, let's start with the regulated nervous system. That's why when I work with any dog, I'm starting with their nervous system, relaxation, decompression. Now, just to finish up, I want a little disclaimer on the polyvagal theory because it is still, there's still debate, right, in academic circles, which is everything. Right, we're always going to have debate, which is good because that's how we learn new information. That's how we go deeper with things. So that's really good. So some researchers do question aspects of the evolutionary hierarchy and specific anatomical claims within the theory. However, the broader concepts of the autonomic state shifts, the role of the vagus nerve in regulation, and the impact of safety on behavior are strongly supported by decades of neuroscience research. So in other words, while the full framework of the polyvagal theory continues to be discussed and refined, we just have to understand that the takeaway is basically the same. It's nervous system state influences behavior, learning, digestion, heart rate, and social engagement. And safety, to me, is the number one thing, right? If you feel safe, if your dog feels safe, then regulation happens. And so if you need to know how to make your dog feel safe, definitely go back and listen to a few of our episodes where we talked about trauma. We have a 5-part series on trauma. I will probably be doing a new series on trauma and chronic stress later in the year. This is what my book is on. It's about healing that chronic stress in dogs and dealing with trauma. It is something that I am seeing so regularly, and I think we need to learn how to kind of avoid those. Again, we can't avoid the stress. I want you to understand that. We're not avoiding the stress that your dogs are going to feel. What we are is we need to teach our dogs how to bounce back from stress, how to deal with the stress and bounce back from stress. But you can't bounce back if you're never in the regulation area to begin with. All right, so if you see that you think your dog is dysregulated constantly, reach out. I will help you help your dog get regulated. If you're dysregulated, find someone to help you get regulated. Find a life coach. Find someone who is into somatic healing, therapy. Get regulated so that you and your dog can have an amazing, regulated life, enjoying what this world does have to offer. There are a lot of wonderful things that we could be doing with our dogs and a lot of wonderful feelings. But let's start with regulation. And you've got to take care of yourself. You need to be the priority. Just like they tell you on an airplane to put your oxygen mask on first, because you can't help anyone else if you don't. This is the same with your regulation. Regulate yourself. Take care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, so that you can be there for others and that you can be there for your dog. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. I appreciate you. I love you, and love your neighbor.